The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Nice to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In.
You have always been a voice of reason through all of this.
Appreciate your time, what you're doing for America.
I give you advice, and it doesn't work at all.
You are definitely not inept by any means.
I like to hear women say that about me.
Whatever advice you're going to send my way, I am 100% taking it.
I can't tell you what to do. I will not tell you what to do.
Okay. Well, thanks.
That wasn't the answer I wanted.
Are you kidding me?
Great stuff, Dr. Ray. I'm glad I called.
I've scheduled my day around listening to your radio show.
You don't have to laugh so hard.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Sometimes I get so frustrated when I'm at the gym. I got this one machine I like to use. It's the treadmill. I enjoy the treadmill, and they got these little pockets here where you can put stuff. Somebody put a water bottle in the Pringles holder on my treadmill. Couldn't believe that. Don't they know what those things are for? Thanks for joining me, as always. Appreciate the company. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Program here is The Doctor Is In. This is the Friday variant. You have to use variant now. I used to use version, but you can use variant of The Doctor Is In. It is Look Back Friday. Something we came up with about 10 years ago, as my producer man Andrew Kruchek informs me. Because I'd get frustrated. I'd say, you know, there's more I wanted to say about that call, or there's a question there that came up that could have been addressed, and we didn't have time because we had folks on the line. We decided, well, what if we select some of these calls? And obviously, every call could be a long exchange. But some of them lend themselves well to a few more comments, whether it be explaining terminology, whether it be going off in a direction perhaps the caller didn't want to go in or didn't seek to go in. And I thought this might be a direction that would offer some help, but it didn't obviously have time. So you can just do what you can at the moment. So these calls are picked on that basis. Now, all of that sounds very altruistic, and it sounds like I'm very charitable and kind. In fact, the actual motive, the ulterior motive, is that I just want to talk more. But that doesn't sound as good as if you say this is why we do Look Back Friday, because I just want to talk more. So I had to find other reasons for doing this. We will get to those shortly. My first book was a book titled You're a Better Parent Than You Think. Way back, I was in my 20s when I wrote that book. It took me 3 years, because it was the first book I'd ever written, and writing a book is the hardest thing I've ever done. The basis of it was because I was the sort of parenting go-to guy at the mental health center where I was for those years. I saw an awful lot of insecurity, nervousness, second-guessing, wondering, am I doing it right? What if I mess up my kid psychologically? Because that has been the byproduct of the onslaught of so many experts and their opinions. Very much so. We've really made parents into a nervous bunch. It's harder for them just to kind of make good judgments and go through parenting with some confidence that their good judgments are going to far outweigh their bad judgments, and they're all done in the context of love and good, strong discipline. But no, did I handle that right? Is that what I should have said? Is that how I should have said it? What if my child reacts this way? What if this breeds some kind of psychological reverberation that I can't anticipate, and 22 years from now it's going to pop up somewhere? Believe me, if I had to concoct a whole bunch of notions that would make parents nervous and insecure, I don't think I could do much better than what we've done. There was a program, I'll give you an example of this. There was a program very popular, I'd say in the 70s and 80s, when all of these kind of psychologically correct things were hitting the airwaves, hitting the schools. Very, very popular program. I I could say that it may have been the top, program, and it was a series of educational presentations that schools signed up for, parent groups signed up for over a course of several weeks. And in one of the sections was titled 10 Obstacles to Communicating with Teenagers. Now, some of those 10 made pretty good sense. I mean, you don't put the kid down, obviously. You don't scream. You don't yell. You don't try to trap them. It's just good common sense stuff. But there were a few others. One, do not ask any questions. What? Well, that's a question. Why would you not ask any questions? Because their rationale was, questions are a form of interrogation. And it looks like you are interrogating the child. Well, as a therapist, I ask a lot of questions. You got to ask questions. You got to find out what's going on. You may not necessarily comment on the answers for a while, but questions are an absolutely integral part of a good relationship, especially parent to child. But in this case, and I know where this philosophy was coming from, it was coming from a kind of reflective sort of therapy approach. You don't ask questions, you reflect back. Well, that must have very much frustrated you when she said that, as opposed to saying, what did she say? How did she say it? Well, what did you say back? No, those are questions. That's an interrogation. They said this also. Don't give any advice. Yeah, the implication of giving advice, the inference, is that the child can't solve his own problems. And I remember thinking when I read that, maybe he can't. Maybe he's 15, and he doesn't really know exactly how to handle this. Maybe he wants your advice. Maybe you know more about living than he does. Because I'm going to assume that the average parent is older than his child. I mean, I don't have any data to support that, but that's been my observation over the years. I mean, I haven't found an exception to that yet. So I'm going to assume that the parent might know a little bit more and might be able to give some guidance and advice. Isn't that what parents are supposed to do? Well, not according to this particular approach. You see why parents are getting so neurotic? The normal stuff of interaction is now being called into question. Who? By a guy that has all kinds of letters after his name and by a guy that has this wildly popular parenting course. But here's my favorite one. You will like this as a people of faith, if you're listening. Do not tell a child what is right or what is wrong. That is moralizing. And that implies that he can't form his own moral system. I'll tell you what, I've never seen a kid yet who's formed his own moral system that did well. It was so much understood. Stuff that was just kind of a given. And it was axiomatic in parenthood that the parents instruct the child by asking questions in morals. In virtue, in conduct. But yet you got this supposed expert calling it into question. You're moralizing. You're turning the kid off. You're implying that he can't form his own morals. That's right. I don't think kids can form their own morals. Oh, they can form something. Know exactly how it'll pan out. But to the degree they don't absorb the morals their parents are trying to instruct them in, probably pretty high correlation, not going to live life well, at least in the short term anyway, until they realize their parents knew what they were talking about. You see why parents are so skittish? It is instructions like that. And I know the majority of parents are going to hear that and think, well, this guy must know what he's talking about. He's an expert. He's got a big program.
Everybody uses this program. So who am I? I'm just a mom. I'm just a dad. I mean, it may not sit all that well with me. I may hike an eyebrow when I hear this, but who am I to question it? So I guess I better try to do this. And what will likely happen is that it's not natural to do it that way. So you'll try to do it that way, and you'll run into all kinds of bumpy spots. And then you'll think, well, I must not be doing it right. Because if I were doing it right, then these goals of this well-adjusted kid should be happening. But it doesn't seem like this has gone in the direction that I want. Must be me, because I don't have letters after my name. People will say to me, well, you know, you do have letters after your name, right? And you've been educated in this, and you've had experience in this for many decades. So that's probably really helped you as a parent, hasn't it? And I said, you know what's helped me more? Is that I don't get bullied and buffaloed by a lot of the nonsense theories that are out there. I realize they don't work. I realize they just cause insecurity among parents. I realize that they cause parents not to enjoy parenting like they otherwise would. That's where my degree and my experience helps me a lot. It's given me the confidence to act as dad. A dad who wants to raise kids with my morals and value system. A dad who has to make judgments. And a dad who realizes that I'm raising different children with different temperaments and different approaches. And this is not formula parenting. And I didn't strive to be psychologically correct. According to who? Because I certainly wouldn't want to be psychologically correct according to that particular program. I'm Dr. Ray.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
I am a very happy, grateful revert to the faith. About 12 years ago, I was surfing the channels, and I found EWTN. I didn't even know it existed, and I heard Mother, and remembered that years ago, I had told a Catholic nun at a church in Boston that I was visiting that I missed the faith, and she said, you will come back. And when I was listening to Mother Angelica, I remembered that.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling, 40 years of experience, 17,000 current students, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plans, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right, pretty much everything. My wife and I use Seton. Some of our children. Tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT. Over 30% higher on English and reading on the ACT. It's a rigorous program. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to setonhome.org. That is setonhome.org.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Rated PG-13. Psychological grandstanding at the depth of a 13-year-old. Nice to have you with me. You know, this debate about what age do you marry someone? Are they younger than you? Are they older than you? How's that work out? If this is this September to
whatever it is, December marriages. I don't know exactly what that means, but it's more appropriate, as it has been in our culture anyway, for a man to marry a younger woman than a woman to marry a younger man. I don't know how that holds up, but Phyllis Diller, remember the comedian Phyllis Diller? She has some marriage advice, and I think it's pretty sound. She says, whatever you look like as a woman, marry a man your own age. As your beauty fades, so will his eyesight. Something to ponder. Let's go to Lewis from Texas. His grandson is struggling to eat because he had a choking episode. What's happening with your grandson here?
Well, it was in around mid-May when my son-in-law, daughter, and a grandson, he's eight, and a little baby girl's a year and a half, or two and a half. They were at a function, a meal, and they're sitting together, and my grandson was showing a little choking sign to his dad, and right away he looked at him and he said he couldn't breathe, he was choking. So dad popped up, gave him the Heimlich, and after a little bit he popped up a grape, a whole grape that had gotten stuck in his little throat, and of course it scared the heck out of dad and mom, and but you know they got through it, and he was teary-eyed, a little scared himself, but you know, he got through the day okay. He did eat a little bit and continued to eat fairly normal. But then in July, while they were visiting over here in San Antonio, we were at a restaurant, and after we ate, we're looking around at some things there in the restaurant, and he started to show Mama that he was choking again, like he couldn't breathe. So Mom right away went into action, gave him the Heimlich for a few seconds, and then he waved it off that he was okay. So there was nothing that came up, didn't appear like he was choking on anything. He'd already eaten and had just been sipping on a drink. But from that point forward, he was just real shy about eating. He was like fearful to eat. At the next meal, he just barely ate a little bit, was chewing it a long time. And he began to over time, the next few days, just to eat very little of whatever was offered to him. And he would spit some of it out. And it was really concerning Mom and Dad, of course, and everybody, that you know, he's not getting nutrition. What's going on here? And Mom and Dad tried to talk to him about, you know, was it just he was afraid to choke? Was that what was going on? And trying to, you know, encourage him to eat a little bit. And it went on like that, where he was barely eating. He would eat a little bit, but just barely. And here over the last few days, he's back in Kansas now, where they're stationed. He has eaten a little bit more, and he's been given the effort to eat a little bit more, but still not normal to what he used to eat. But it seems like he's starting to improve a little bit.
Easiest thing to do is to give him foods that he can't choke on, you know, applesauce and nutrition drinks and things like that. That's the easiest thing to do right now in this little bridge time here before, as he moves his way back. I would say, I would tell him, I'd say, you're not going to choke because we're right here. And even if that would happen, which it's not going to, but even if it would, we're right here. We can fix it. It's not a problem. All right. So that's the first thing. Second thing is I'd let him have some foods that is easy to swallow, stuff that's nutritional, you know, whole milk, stuff like that. But then I would say I would make it probably a requirement that he has to try a few things that are safe, you know, maybe nothing like a grape. But something that he can chew, like a little bit of chicken or bread, something that he can chew up real good, and I want to see some effort. And keeping in mind, if you don't do that, you're not getting any dessert. I mean, that dessert is contingent upon you chewing up a few things that we give you that are very safe. I would do that.
Okay.
Yeah. Because we got to get him past this fear. It sounds like he's moving past it anyway, but there's a lot more to say about this, and I want to say about it in a future look back call. Has he lost weight?
Yeah. to me, just on appearance, it looked like he was starting to lose a little bit of weight.
Now, this has been going on for a couple months, and they're trying to coax him, and meal times are now becoming stress times. Oh, boy, can we get him to take a few bites? No, I personally would require it. I would say you're going to take a few of these bites. You're going to see they're not going to hurt you. You got to find that out. And you're not getting any dessert if you don't. And furthermore, I don't know what else I might do about this. So you're going to have to try these things. And I may just decide some of your freedoms are going to be curtailed if you don't. Oh, the biggest objection to something like that is, why would you even connect a consequence with what is clearly a fear behavior? Well, because the way to get past the fear behavior is to see that your fear is, for the most part, completely unwarranted. Grown-ups, when they develop fears based on no danger, there really isn't anyone to get them out of that fear against their will. For a kid, if you can get the kid out of the fear by maybe setting up a few conditions, the goal is to let the child find out that what I fear is not dangerous. But Dr. Ray, he could choke again. Well, of course. But the odds of that are low, and the odds of irreparable harm is very low if mom and dad are there. That's the first thing. The second thing is, it's interesting what happened. And this is what anxiety does. He seemed to be okay, right? For several months. And then there was something that happened at that restaurant. Maybe he ate a piece of something that was a little hard to swallow. And he immediately thought, uh-oh, here it is again, I'm choking. So he sounded the alarm. Mom went into action, and then he said, no, I'm okay. Because he was hypersensitive to the feeling. It was reminiscent of the feeling he had when he choked on that grape. That's what anxiety does. Anxiety lurks, and it can stay quiet, dormant, for a while, until there's a similar situation that can erupt. And the individual brings back memories, and the anxiety gets linked to the memory. And here we go, surge. So in this case, my guess would be, now this look back call was from a few months back. My guess would be that this little guy's back to normal eating. And it's interesting, too, that kids get over anxiety much quicker than grown-ups do. Our anxiety tends to get locked in. And the irony is, he's going to see quicker than a grown-up, because I've had grown-ups really have trouble with a choking crisis, the repercussions of it. He's going to see quicker that there is no danger in eating. Right now, his view is, there is danger in eating. Well, there is no danger in eating. If somebody says, well, there's a risk. Yeah, well, there always is a risk, but it's not the kind of risk that you say, I'm not going to eat because of the risk. It's like, you can get struck by lightning too, but I'm not going to not go outside because I could get struck by lightning. You can get in a car accident, but I'm not going to not get in a car because I could have a car accident. It's always a risk weighing benefit thing. So in his case, he's saying that the danger of a choking is so high that I'm going to stop eating. Well, in fact, we've got to let him see through rewiring, really, that the danger of the choking is really not there to the degree he thinks it is. And the only way that's going to happen is that he slowly eats his way back to normal. And I should have said, instead of saying chicken or bread, I should have said scrambled eggs. Something with a little substance to it, but still not any kind of choking risk.
Hi, Dr. Ray. I love listening to you and reading your books. Thank you for taking my call.
Living the Beatitudes with Father Bjorn.
Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. This strange beatitude reminds us that Jesus is challenging us with his ways to heaven on a new exodus. We're leaving behind the Egypt of this world to find the eternal paradise of heaven. When we tend to think of happiness, we tend to think of it in a self-centered way, a possession of a temporary good or passing fancy. But Jesus is calling us into eternal happiness. And actually, morality is a search for happiness, says Dominican priest Servais Pinkers. We're looking to be happy, and a lot of times we end up at dead-end roads that don't lead us to where we want to go. How can we be blessed when we mourn? In sorrow and difficulty, hardship and cross, we are called closer to Jesus. It's God's fingerprint in our heart reminding us that we're made for eternal happiness. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted.
For more about the Beatitudes, visit EWTNRC.com.
Sin creates a proclivity to sin, the Catholic Catechism teaches. It develops vice by repetition of the same wrong act. Thus, sin tends to reinforce and reproduce itself. Vice can be linked to the capital sins, which are called capital because they can engender other sins and other vices. The capital sins are pride, avarice, envy, wrath, lust, gluttony, and sloth. Sin is a personal act, but we can also be responsible for the sins of others under certain conditions. Sin can make men accomplices of one another, the Catechism warns, causing concupiscence, violence, and injustice to reign among them. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
I have noticed as I've gotten older that more of my photographs, should I say pictures because you do it on the phone now, do not do me justice. And I finally figured out why that is. They look just like me. I looked at my driver's license picture, you know, and I thought, well, it's not a bad picture. You know, then now you know you're getting up there. Nice to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In. Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time, co-production, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Want to make a quick announcement because we're still beating the bushes, if you want to put it that way, for folks for the Living Right with Dr. Ray TV taping in Covenant Network area, St. Louis, Mo. Yes, that's right. We've been wanting to go there for a long time. And they are cooperating with us. If you'd like to be part of the TV show audience for EWTN season number 14, see yourself on EWTN, go to ourcatholicradio, one word, .org/Dr. Ray. And you can sign up April 16, April 17 for the TV show. The bigger the audience, the better. You folks add so much energy to it. You ask questions, you applaud real loud, and you wake up some of the people in the audience. You do that. So we'd love to have you. Bring the kids. You can come to one show, two shows, three shows, four shows. Both shows are the evenings of, like 5:30 and 7, I believe, or thereabouts. We kind of have a little room there to wiggle. OurCatholicRadio.org/Dr. Ray. Cindy is from Indiana, and she's commenting on a previous call. We had a call, an individual talking about having married a non-Catholic and how that worked out for them. Well, Cindy said, I want to add to that. So she's kind of getting a look back on the look back. So I'm looking back on her look back, which would really be look back squared.
I was in that place. I was the young lady who was head over heels in love with a very nice, wonderful young man. And he was not Catholic, and I was. So we went ahead and got married, and it was a poverty in our relationship the entirety of 37 years. So I think it's worthwhile for parents to try to have that conversation. You may not influence it, but at least you haven't, you've at least given the person a chance to consider, and hopefully have those conversations with their boyfriend or girlfriend.
How would you suggest, now back then when you were in love with this guy and you thought that there was some way to work all this out, how would you have reacted to a parent questioning your choice?
I like to think that I would say, you know, you're right, we've talked about it some, but we haven't really talked about it in detail and what that's going to look like. And I think the first year we were married, and he absolutely refused to go to church with me on Easter.
Didn't you see that coming? Cindy, didn't you see that coming when you were dating him?
No, because he went to church with my family when we were dating.
Ah, win you over, yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think he kind of, yeah, a little dishonest. So, but I knew he wasn't interested in being Catholic. He did agree to let the kids be raised Catholic, so that was all on me. And, you know, there was a lot of good parts to our marriage, but that was always a piece.
You're speaking
that was
in the past tense of your marriage.
Yes, he passed.
Ah, I see. Okay. All right, so your advice is to get parents as best they can to help kids explore the potential complications of a marriage to someone of either another faith tradition or no faith at all, because typically marriage makes it more complex.
Right. Absolutely.
All righty. Good advice there, Cindy. Thank you. Well, there's a couple of major wrinkles, of course, nowadays. One is that it is much, much harder to find a faith-filled young people. And if you narrow it down to faith-filled young Catholic people, I know so many young women who just can't find a guy that would be spousal material at the deep level that they would like, because their faith means something to them. That's first thing. Second thing is, if I were the parent, I would ask a lot of questions about what, say for my example, my daughter or my son, what they think will happen. Do you think this person will come around? Do you see signs that they're reluctant? How will you relate at the deepest level you want to relate to if that person doesn't believe what you believe, in morally speaking? What about raising children? You may not want the kids to watch or have certain things, but your spouse, who doesn't follow the same moral perspective, will fight you on that. There are so many complications to this, and I've had so many spouses come to me and say, we are not on the same wavelength about so many things. It isn't just our religious beliefs. It's our morals. It's our conduct. It's our giving to charity. It is what we pursue as people. It is moral issues, pornography. It is unfaithfulness. All of these things are complications, and the person is clinging to hope that this can all be ironed out. I was very fortunate. My wife was not Catholic. At that time, my Catholic faith was there. It isn't, I think, where I am now in terms of embracing my faith. But I saw my wife as a very depth-filled individual, a very thoughtful individual, an individual who, by and large, we looked at life the same way. And she went to church with me, but she was not Catholic. She converted during our marriage, on her own, really. And I tease her. I said, it was because of my holy influence. She said, no, that's what slowed me down. Okay, I got that. So, fortunately for us, my wife and I are now very much in the same direction on the faith. But at the time, in marriage, we weren't. But there was a maturity and a depth and a religious sensibility about her that, for me, I didn't enter it with too much trepidation. Although I got to admit, I didn't think through some of these things as well as I could have. But I was fortunate enough that she was who she was. But nowadays, it's harder to find a faith-filled Catholic spouse, very much so. And it is definitely because of the culture we live in. If you do marry someone who is not of the same faith beliefs, at least somewhat, the complications through marriage can get tough.
Welcome to Spirit of Stewardship. Jeremy Belsky is your host for real-life stories, encouragement, and ideas to enhance your own gifts of work, wealth, and wisdom in response to God's blessings for you.
I'm Jeremy Belsky, and today's topic is Stewardship of the Environment, God's Creation of Nature. When you hear the message, be a wise steward of your resources, do you ever consider the role you play in your community environment? It's natural to think of time, talent, and treasure when stewardship is mentioned, but our faith teaches us that all is gift from God. Thus, respect for nature and doing our part to ensure a safe and clean environment is important. Here are just three areas we can pay more attention. A lot of action has been taken in recent years by nonprofits geared towards a cleaner environment. The first area of focus is to eliminate litter. Consider how your actions to pick up after yourself are pleasing to God. Be proud to do your part to keep your community and neighborhood clean. Secondly, look at ways to recycle and make the most out of your purchases. Does it matter to you that so much plastic consumes our landfills? Have you given thought as to how you can make a particular purchase last longer? Third, in a country filled with abundance, what's being done to ensure our nature and environment for the next generation? This is more than eating bread crust and cleaning off your plate. The root lies in not wasting what we've been given. There's a great deal of time and effort that goes into caring for our place of residence in addition to our possessions. Keeping up what is ours or giving our used possessions to the less fortunate are a couple of ways to be prudent stewards of our blessings from God. I'm Jeremy Belsky, your host for Spirit of Stewardship.
To learn how you can better share your talents and resources, contact your local parish priest. Your level of involvement in the church now positively impacts our faith in the future.
Very nice to have you with me on this Doctor Is In. Dr. Ray Garetti. Not a real doctor. PhD. Posthole digger. Putterer in the history of Denmark. Pizza Hut driver. Or my favorite, prominent head damage. All right. Let's take a look at an earlier call. This is from Mindy in Nebraska. This is what social media can... it can rot.
I have a 15-year-old. She's almost 16. She was had out of wedlock, and for almost 16 years now, the other party has not been involved in her life. And
zero? Zero. From the beginning, zero.
Zero. Yes.
Ooh.
And just recently sent her a friend request on Facebook. However, I'm assuming at that point it is to potentially have some kind of interaction. The concern that I have is, of course, there's an emotional side to this. There were threats that were made when she was a baby. There were threats by safety that were made to me when they when I was expecting with her of potential physical harm. And so for obvious reasons, we have kind of stayed quiet. And instead, or now that we have this, you know, I'm somebody who likes to look at the fact that people do change. We do mature. And, you know, that was way back in teenage years. And so the problem is that I don't know if he has changed, if he has cleaned up some of his, he had used drugs in the past. I have found out. And so I obviously don't know if he's grown out of that and matured. So I'm just kind of wanting to figure out, we've got the emotional side versus, I'm not sure if there's maybe like a moral side to this as well as the logical side. So just trying to figure out what the best step is, if I should allow this and pursue it and see if he would like to be active in her life, or we should just continue out the few remaining years until she is an adult herself.
Are you married?
No.
Okay. So you have raised this young lady all by yourself all this time?
Yes.
I think your her birth father would have been smart to contact you first and say, here's what I'm thinking of doing. I'm wondering if he's thinking you would just flat out say, no way, no how, no chance, get out of here. So therefore he didn't. He went an end around and went straight to her through kind of a face-to-faceless social media.
Right.
Two angles on this. What's your daughter think?
Well, so she sent me a screenshot of the friend request and was like, hey, is this my biological father? And by the time I responded back to her that yes, that is him, she had already deleted his friend request because we've had a very open, as she's gotten older, we've had conversations on, you know, why I chose to kind of lay low and why I didn't recommend at that time, you know, when she was younger, for her to reach out. And so she kind of has, I think she kind of looks to me as, I just assumed that you would be angry as well and tell me no. And I'm like, well, no, I mean, people do mature, they do grow up. However, this individual does not pay child support and is, seems to be unable to maintain a job of some sort or something. I'm not quite sure exactly what the situation is, but something along those lines. So
she is of the mindset of her own volition, I really don't want to pursue this right now. Or is she saying, I wouldn't mind pursuing it, but I know that would affect you, Mom, so therefore I'm not going to.
I'm thinking it was more of the second one.
Okay.
I think her initial reaction was, Mom's going to freak out. I don't even want to think about this. I'm just going to delete it, and we're going to move on. And then once I was like, okay, well, no, people do change. We do mature. And so therefore,
I suspect, Mindy, she's going to pursue this out of curiosity would be my guess.
I think she wants to a certain extent, yes.
I would sit down with her and I'd say, let's really have an in-depth talk about this, given that there's been no contact for 16 years, given mm-hmm. that we don't know your birth dad's state in life. Just explore all of the intricacies with her. Then okay. I would say, if any of this is coming to pass, I got to get a sense of who he is right now. I can't just assume that this guy's responsible, that he will not trash me to you. I can't assume that he's living any kind of moral life. I don't even know. I have no idea what he's been like for 16 years. So I got to get a mm-hmm. handle on that, and maybe he'll talk to me. That's what okay. I would do. Then I would also say, if it comes to the point where she says, Mom, I'd really, really like to meet him, you have every right to say as a parent, well, and when you're 18, we'll do that. It's like an adoptive kid. You can do that. You have every right to do that. You're allowed as a mom.
Mm-hmm.
He pretty much forfeited all of his parental rights, flat out. I don't know legally what rights he still has, but from a practical standpoint, he just cut out. Now, I suspect he isn't going to want to talk to you because his view is going to be, well, you just spent the last 15 years trashing me to my kid. So therefore, I suspect that she doesn't like me because of all the poison you put in her veins. That would be my guess, unless he really has rehabbed his life. And again, I can't know. You have to talk to him about that and find out. Let's just say that he has. And let's just say that your daughter says, Mom, I really would like to meet him. Then I would have it under very strict supervision. He comes to the house and you're there.
Yeah, I think I'd be more of, we'll meet in a public location and I'll be there. But yeah.
Okay, fine. Whatever conditions you want to put on it, I think mm-hmm. you have every right to do that. You might want to check with an attorney and say, do I have to do anything about this? And if the attorney says, no, under the statute in our state, this is what you can do, then it'd be kind of like similar to me when if a birth parent would want to see one of my kids at age 16 as a private adoption, I'd say, well, we'll consider this when you're 18. We had something similar that happened to us, that one of the birth parents decided when our daughter was very young, you know, I went back in her life, even after she had signed away all of that. And we realized the confusion that would cause. And it would also cause confusion with the other kids, because they might say, well, okay, wait a minute. Do I have half-brothers and sisters somewhere, someplace? So we said when she's of age, that will happen. I think Mindy's really got to get a lot more information on this guy. She's got to meet with him. If he refuses to meet with her, that's going to tell her something. If he's rehabbed or changed or grown, then he would do what he has to do. He would recognize that Mindy has raised this young woman all this time by herself, and he's not done a thing. He's not sent her a dollar, which is big. That says something. It says a lot. Even if he didn't give monthly child support, he could have said, here's some money that I've had extra. I've been working a little bit, and I wanted you to have this. I know I'm not supporting like I should, but here. But he didn't even do that. So that makes me a little wary at this point. And I've had situations like this where the birth parents decided, I want to get back in my child's life, but what that means to them is not what it would mean to the adoptive parent, or in this case, to mom. It was spurred on by, well, somebody putting pressure on them, or second thoughts of, gee, I wonder how she's doing now. It's been 15 years. She's probably pretty grown up. Okay, so I don't have to deal with a little kid. I can deal with someone relatively on my sophistication level. I don't know what his motive is. I'd really want to know that. I'd want to know how that came about. And the only way you're going to know is that Mindy has to meet with him by herself. Now, again, she's under no obligation to do any of this. But if she says, you know, my daughter would like this, maybe Mindy can go to the daughter and say, well, here's the steps I'm going to take. And if any place along this journey we run into a roadblock, then I'm going to have to regroup and say, this will be something you can do at age 18. Now, here's the other problem. Dad may just simply go around mom. He's already connected with her on Facebook. Okay, so she's blocked him, but she can unblock him. And she can contact him. So, in essence, mom can't totally stop the communication unless she takes the phone or unless she disables social media. Given that, my guess would be that if dad refuses to meet with mom, which is a bad sign, by the way, that's a bad sign, he's going to go directly towards daughter. And I don't know what he'll tell her. You can't know what he'll tell her. You can't know if he'll meet her after school. You can't know. That would make me nervous. It definitely would, as a parent who has raised this child. And, I've seen this so many times. I see it more often with dads. They drop out of the picture for years and years at a time. And then he went back in. I want to be a dad now. Because during the earlier years when the child was being raised, and a lot of times this happens in divorce situations, when the child was being raised and had his or her own little world and own little family, dad was never a part of it. He disappeared. But for whatever the reason, now he wants to reconnect because the child is 13, he's a boy, and that's my boy. I've seen that happen. So I really would be cautious, if it were me, about approaching this. I'm Dr. Ray.
This is Conversations with Consequences, where we delve deeper into issues affecting our church, our country, and our core, the family.
As Catholics, we need to be informed, aware, and able to
talk through some of the tough topics that we're facing in our culture and in our world. Conversations with Consequences gives us the tools to do so.
It's not enough to pray. We have to be a light for the world.
Conversations with Consequences, tomorrow at 5 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
It's extremely, I think, hypocritical. It's awful. It's so frustrating to hear these big companies saying they are so proud to pay for abortions for the employees, even pay for transportation, pay for the abortions, up to $10,000 some companies are willing to spend to send their employees to get an abortion in states that would still allow it, such as New York and California, and of course right now with all the shenanigans going on in Michigan. But what about health care? What about what about maternity care for moms? What about backing moms in other ways in the workforce as opposed to pitting them against their children? I mean, think about how sexist that is and how undignified that is to say to a woman, you can go get your abortion and then you can come back to work in a day or two. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
This program brought to you in part by the town of Ave Maria, Florida.
Ave Maria, a big kind of small town. A golf cart friendly, ride your bike everywhere kind of town with something for everyone. Resort style amenities, two golf courses, shopping, and dining in our town center. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at the core of the community and a wide range of homes to meet your family's needs. Visitors are welcome. More information can be found at avemaria.com. Ave Maria, a big kind of small town.
You know, I think fries should be offered more often when you are attempting to present something. Like, if you go for a mortgage, they say, yeah, your mortgage was approved, and would you like fries with that? I don't know. I just think that's part of our genre out there. I don't have enough time, so I want to read something from C.S. Lewis, which I used as the quote introducing my book, Jesus, the Master Psychologist. If Christianity should happen to be true, then it is quite impossible that those who know this truth and those who don't should be equally well equipped for leading a good life. Knowledge of the facts must make a difference to one's actions. The research, the secular research, as pointed out in great detail in Father Spitzer's book, The Moral Wisdom of the Catholic Church, says this. To the degree that people follow Christian moral principles, they live a better life. They have less struggles, less turbulence, less anxiety, less depression, less suicidal ideation, less problems with alcohol, drugs. They do. That's what the secular research says. A lot of it says that. And it kind of amazes me how most people who reject Christ don't even want to look into whether the way he says to live, through his church even, would make a difference for them. They may know they're incredibly unhappy. They may know they struggle with anxiety or depression, or life seems totally dissatisfactory to them, but they don't look for any alternative. They won't look for Christ as an alternative. Some will. I mean, that's how some people convert. They hit a rock bottom emotionally, socially, but for most, I think it's safe to say they don't look toward Christ. He's not an option. Because in their minds, maybe they think that what he teaches, what he obliges, would be something that would constrict them. They wouldn't be free. They wouldn't have the loose living that they might want. And the irony is, if he is God, he knows the absolute best way to live. And to the degree that you adhere to his teaching, which is what my book said, you will live better on this earth, as well as making an eternal bet
with your soul. Lewis makes a great point. If Christ is God and you know him, you're going to live better. Doesn't mean you're not going to have suffering, but it means overall you're going to live better. If you don't, and you do it your way, or you do it the culture's way, or you do it whatever way you grab onto at random, so to speak, sometimes, it's not going to work. Thanks for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. Appreciate very much the company. Appreciate Andrew Krucek, all he does over there in Ann Arbor to make these look back calls flow very much. And I appreciate you for keeping me company as you always do, here and there, for bits at a time. Walk with God. He knows the right way to live.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.